Hey, what's up, guys? On this episode of Blood, Sweat, and Gear, we're joined, well, first of all, we're joined by Dave Kalik. Skip is taking the day off. We talk about the Tampa Pro, and then we go into a bunch of listener questions. So stay tuned. We're going to do all that right now. Hey, what's up, guys? Welcome back to Blood, Sweat, and Gear. I'm Scott McNally, and with me, as always, is S2H. And sitting in for Skip Hill is our good friend of the show, Dave Kalik. Guys, I'm excited. We are going to start out talking a little bit about the Tampa Pro, because that's coming up, hopefully, here in just a few weeks. And then we have a bunch of questions. Anybody who would like to take part, feel free to, you can post questions in the live feed at the Advices Radio page, not at the group, you know, not if you've seen this like somewhere else. You have to go like directly to the page and share there. That way I can see it pop up here on my program. Anyway, what's up, guys? Dave Kalik, thanks for joining us.
You bet, guys. A question before we talk, after we talk about the Tampa Pro, can we, there's a listener question. How much masterum it's going to take for you to grow a porn stash?
You saw that? You heard that? Where'd you get that from?
There's the handlebar stash. I'm thinking if you breach 300 milligrams a week, you can get the regular porn stash. And if you go 500, you can get the handlebars. So we can go into that question afterwards. But the Tampa Pro, man, it's really, fingers crossed. We all see what's happening with the spikes. And you're just mentioning, you know, Michigan and, you know, other states. Yeah, I mean, hopefully it goes off. You know, hopefully we can sneak it off.
Yeah. That's what I'm hoping too, man. Are you planning on going, Dave?
Yeah, I'll be out there. We're fingers crossed, if I'm out there Wednesday to set up camp. Because Adam, you know, the 212, Adam Young, his prejudging is Friday.
Oh, okay.
Weigh-ins and registration are Thursday night for all the athletes, all classes, and then Friday is the actual 212.
Okay. So, Scott, I told Dave I was thinking about going out there to see this show and to follow Dave around as he gets his guys ready, shoot some video of behind the scenes. Mm-hmm. I don't know though, man. I mean, I feel like tickets, even if like, I wonder if I could get a refund. Like if the whole thing failed, how does that work?
Scott, as you get definitely trip protection on it, obviously.
Yeah. But the tickets, though, are like literally okay, so it's Spirit Airlines, so that's cheap, you know, cheapest as you can pretty much go, but like $92 round trip.
Yeah, I mean, worst case, you lose $92.
Yeah.
Yes.
That's kind of
the insurance on the trip will be half the amount.
Yeah. right. Mm-hmm. So, anyway, I'm pumped, though, and I really am hoping this happens. You sent some video. Today, is this of Dorian?
Yeah.
All right. I'm going to see if I can put this up here. Let's see if I can do this without there being volume added. Oh no, just go straight to it. Yeah. He's looking round, dude.
Yeah. I mean, this prep has been the best prep yet.
Yeah. What is he weighing around right now?
Like on low days, he dips into the 40s.
All right.
And like we do pretty much, there's like a 4-day sequence where we're lower in fats and carbs, you know? Okay. And then he goes more into a caloric surplus for a couple days. And he go as high as 265 on those days.
Really?
Oh, yeah. He volumizes back up. And then we're getting a metabolic reaction just from all of a sudden there being a caloric surplus out of nowhere after 4 days.
Yeah. You know, I could see that.
So he like kind of indirectly loses fat that way, you know? So his low end is 46 and high end is 63-ish, 64-ish.
Holy shit. What was like last year comparatively, where was he then? Cause I feel like he's a decent amount. He looks much improved.
He's way bigger. I mean, if you were to compare the highs and lows, from this, you know, from last year's prepping, it's about 7 more pounds.
Really?
Of tissue, yeah. I think the reason why this prep is going great is because of the success of the offseason. You know, the offseason dictates the success of pre-contest, both from, you know, the more clay you have to work with, hopefully, and also, you know, from a metabolic standpoint. You know, he's put on a lot more muscle, so therefore it's easier for him to go into a caloric deficit, and at the same time, his caloric deficit has higher calories compared to last year when, you know, he has more size now, so there's more calories involved on both his lower calorie days and his higher calorie days.
Yeah, yeah. Hey, Dave, you're like a little bit off center on the screen.
We
only see like part of your face sometimes.
What is it? Okay, by the way, when that text came in, did you hear the alert, like that message? Should I shut down my alerts?
No, we didn't hear it. We didn't hear it.
Oh, you didn't? Just me.
But you're still off center, though. Yeah, there you go. A little bit more.
This way or this way?
That way. Yeah, yeah. Now you're, yeah. Good.
Tilt your head a little bit to the left.
And then hold it that way the whole show.
Like this. Yeah.
So
how tall is this guy? How tall is Dorn? Your competitor. How tall is he?
Oh, he's 5'9".
So he's pretty big dude.
Yeah, he's round as hell. I mean, as far as conditioning, that's why we really want this show to go off, because this is by far, obviously, you know, his will be his best look, you know, and I really just hope this goes off for a lot of reasons. You know, a lot of other guys have been getting ready. You know, I mean, these shows have been prolonged, and it's funny because this is the only show that's not actually, the date hasn't been changed. Mm. I mean, normally, as you guys know, this is normally the very last show prior to Olympia.
Yeah.
And now it's the first show of the season.
Dude, that's crazy, man.
Yep, think about that.
That's crazy. I'm looking at.
So in a way, the show is kind of symbolic, you know, in a way, because I feel that if this doesn't go off, I mean, look, think of it this way. Real quick. So New York right now has a 2-week, you have to quarantine 2 weeks when you come in from a hot state like Arizona or California.
Okay.
Look what's going on. I hope everything mellows out soon. I mean, that's September 5th. Presumably it could clear up by then, but
yeah,
as of now, man, wow.
I just had the video up of Dorian hitting his legs in the gym. Dude, yeah, he's looking crazy. Did you just go out there? Did that already happen? You were going to go out there and train with them?
Yeah, I went out there last week.
Okay.
We did some stuff. We did some filming. We did training because, you know, Haley is getting ready for it as well, the female bodybuilding, open bodybuilding. So we did some work out there training. Armbrust Gym opened up a couple weeks ago.
Okay.
So it's cool to get in there. And, you know, we did legs on Sunday. So it was good. Yeah. I mean, his conditioning right now, as you can see, the glutes are, I mean, he's
looking ready, man.
I'm definitely excited. Again, fingers crossed.
Yeah.
The show goes off.
Yeah. No kidding.
If you want to hold him over, that'd be the worst thing probably. Or the least desirable, you know, just try to hold a guy over for a month or whatever after that.
Yeah. It's just exactly. That's the worst part is like, I mean, cause obviously, you know, when you get inside the red zone, you know, six or four weeks out, things are implemented that are more aggressive, you know,
sure.
And then starting, stopping. I mean, there's adrenals, there's so many variables. I mean, as you guys know, there's so many moving parts and it's delicate. So, you know, okay, cancel this one. Maybe 4 weeks from now, it's just,
yeah,
you're dealing with so many variables in conjunction with all the moving parts and then clusterfucks can happen. So it's like, as you said, Scott, yeah, it's just, it's, you know, if they're going to make announce it soon.
Yeah. I would think. You know, you'd think they would, well, this might be wishful thinking, but you would think they would go think of the athlete and go, well, we should probably give these people, if we're going to cancel it, let's cancel it a couple of weeks out at least.
Right.
Let's cancel it before they start the halo.
Well, yeah, especially before the last exactly. week, you know. So, but I don't know if that's the thought process. The halo, it's so
true. Yeah.
Yeah. Don't take your halo. We're canceling.
Yeah. There you go. It could
don't be skip loading.
That could be the newsletter. So, yeah, Skip's going to be there, too. That's the other thing. That's so the amateur portion, Skip will be competing in that. And, Scott, as you can imagine, I texted Skip, and I was like, hey, Skip, I was thinking about coming down. And the first thing he said is like, well, it's not going to be my peak. Like, I'm not trying to peak for that show. Like, I think Skip would rather that I didn't go. He would rather that people didn't go to see him. You know what I mean?
Fly through here and we'll fly down together.
That means you got to go see him.
Yeah, yeah. I think he would prefer that. But you know what it's like? We get really critical of ourselves is what it, you know, when you really care about what you're doing, you do.
Of course.
You get the closer you get to a show. And that's why I've always wanted to have somebody to help me. Like, you know, do I look good? Should I push harder? Should I not push harder? You know, I feel like we get to that point. It's like, that's where you always hear people say like that second set of eyes. And that's the reason why, because like you get too close to your own self, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, there's no doubt.
Yeah.
You know, there's no doubt.
Skip's not critical though on himself, so don't worry about that.
So, all right, I'm going to jump into our questions here. I've got a handful of topics and questions that I've gathered together. And then we have some stuff too that was posted up over at the Facebook page for Advices Radio. Okay, we're going to start out with the training question here. Upright rows. Now, upright rows, I feel like, are something that we used to do a lot of years back. I don't see a lot of people doing upright rows anymore.
It's a great move.
Okay, well, thoughts on upright rows for shoulder development, Dave Callick.
Yeah, I mean, like, it's great. I mean, basically, his rule of thumb, you know, no pun intended, but if your thumbs are closer together, you're going to go more upright. It's going to be more for traps. If you're wider, and you're going more to the front, it's going to be more for anterior delt. I mean, it's a great movement. If you have, the only problem is if you have AC joint issues, it's going to irritate the hell out of them. But I mean, but it's not unlike, you know, doing a military press behind the back, you know, behind the head. I mean, it's an amazing movement. It's just, if you have issues with AC joints or rotator stuff, it can be, you know, obviously bothersome, but it's a great movement.
Mm. Scott?
Yeah. I used to do them religiously until I tore my labrum the second time, and then I could get away with them if they were pretty wide and I kept my thumbs rolled up under the bar, and I always used to use the easy bar, the preset easy bars,
right,
that went up to like 150 and burn through those. But once I jacked my shoulder up, I had to get away from them.
Same thing.
I've heard people talk about that holding the bar wider as in further apart is the answer on that.
Yeah.
And roll your thumbs under
the bar. If your labrum is torn or super spinatus, infraspinatus, that close grip is going to work. Can't do it.
Okay. So wide grip, thumbs under, you're saying, Scott.
If I do it in that way, wide to hit deltoids more. But if you want to get your traps, you can come in narrow and you can just run your thumbs right down the easy bar line.
Exactly.
Like that.
Yeah.
And you can actually point straight up almost with your thumbs when you bring the easy bar up.
Okay. Yep.
You can't go as much weight, but you know, but if you have shoulder issues, none of it's going to feel good, you know?
Yeah. Sure. Yeah. I found for me, that's one of those movements that like the time I mainly do them, and maybe I should work them back in, 'cause I don't have like a big variety in my shoulder exercises. I've done them like to pump up at a show because I feel like I get the traps. I feel like I get the biceps. I feel like I get the delts, like all that stuff that's showing, like that gets really pumped up. Every time I do that exercise, like I look good when I'm done with it.
You get some medial delts in there as well. I mean, if your elbows are positioned correctly, you know.
Yeah. You ever do those or see John Meadows do those things they call six ways? I can demonstrate it now. You do like a... this will be for the video people. So you start down here and you bring the weight. What is it? Up. No, what is it? How's it? Oh, you do lateral raises and then you bring your hands this way and then you go up and then you come back down. And like you can do that. I used to do them. Shelby showed me how to do those. And you could use like at the end of a workout, 2.5 pound plates and you do 20 reps. And I swear to God, like two sets of 20 reps, you will destroy everything in your delt. And that last piece, that up and then back down, that's like all front delt. Like it's ridiculous, you know, the pump you get from those. You ever do those, Dave?
Yeah, years ago. I mean, it definitely, like, especially as you said, the anterior delt right there in the front.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's like, especially like everything's pre-exhausted from the other training prior to that. So
yeah,
you know, your anterior delt, posterior delt, medial delt's all fried from the training. And then as you said, you can use a very light weight and just pump the fuck out of your delts that way afterwards.
And I found too, one of the things for me is if I do if I do just like a front delt raise straight up from the side of my body, then I end up irritating my bicep tendon. Like it just really pulls. Yeah. But if I go from here to here, it doesn't. So it works for me. That one works. There's no question.
Well, I think we all have jacked up shoulders. So, you know, everyone's got something that works for them and something that doesn't work for the next guy.
Yeah. 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 What about rear delts? Give me, lay your philosophy on me, guys, for rear delts. Either you are welcome to jump in.
I mean, a lot of people need to train them first.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, most honestly, like a lot of people, I mean, like I like the pec deck where you're facing inward, you know, and the idea is keeping your elbows high. And the thing is this too, is that with any shoulder movements, I mean, I believe like, let's say for medial delts, you know, the first 10 or 12 inches off your hip is supraspinatus, infraspinatus. So if you start where your medial delt is already engaged and then there's a controlled negative and then you come down to the 10 or 12 inches, that's the starting point. And the same thing, you know, your rear delts, your posterior delts. So if you start with the pec deck and your hands are close, you don't have to start where your hands all the way together. Start where your posterior delts already engaged. And then, you know, keep your chest high and click back, you know, push back. But the starting point is, again, just maybe 12 inches apart your hands. So your posterior delts already engaged.
Okay.
And then the problem is that people, when they go to failure, they start lowering the elbow. The idea is to keep your elbow high. And that's how you're going to keep that posterior, you know, your posterior delt engaged.
What are you going to activate if you lower your elbow?
I think you're going to start borrowing from your medial delt.
Okay. Yeah.
Possibly in your triceps too, I think.
A lot of pressure on your rotator cuffs too.
Oh, for sure. Exactly.
Yeah.
You know, you start utilizing your tricep. You don't realize that you're trying to extend your arm out and stuff. But if you keep your elbow high, you're keeping that engaged. Yeah. Posterior-wise.
Okay. I've seen too where people will they'll kind of like pinch their traps together. You know what I mean? Like when they're doing rear delts, instead of just bringing their arms around, it starts becoming like a pinch the back together movement. Because I think for a lot of people have stronger traps, or a lot of people will try to use their traps, especially if they don't know as much of what they're doing, to do any type of movement, you know?
The only problem with that, I think, is that you can actually just start using, you know, you're using rhomboids and your traps.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. I could see that. Yeah.
I'll tell you one that was good is do seated cable pull downs, but take the widest bar you can get. Yeah. Get your hands real wide, lean back about 30 degrees and bring the cable right to your forehead and hold it for a second.
Yeah.
And then don't extend all the way back out, just, you know, 3/4 of the way. And it takes your rhomboids and your traps completely out of it. But you have to get the right angle. You can't be too upright. You can't be too flat.
Yeah.
So, you know, about you know, 30 degrees or so.
That's one that I learned that from my first coach, Rick Wetmore. And it took me like a month plus of figuring that out. Like, I just couldn't get it. Every time I did it, I was doing like a pull down, basically. You know, but once it clicked, I've always been able to do it since then, but it took me a little bit to figure that one out.
Yeah. It's one where you can be an inch too far forward or too far back, or you put too much weight on. That's another problem. Yeah. And you know, you're getting rocked.
You get that one right, Scott. That's a good one.
Yeah.
Yeah. I like that one. It doesn't hurt my shoulders either. So,
all right. I got one for you, Scott, cause I feel like this is kind of more powerlifting focused. Sore lats from chest training. Is this a thing?
Yeah. I mean, chest training is a pretty general statement, but you can get sore lats. I'll tell you what, to get you some sore lats is use a slingshot when you bench press. Yeah. And you can get some sore lats.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, your lats are engaging in the bench press when you come out of the hold. You know, and depending on your form and how you wedge your body, I mean, they could be more engaged than you think. I mean, the guys that I used to lift with, the guys that are like top, you know, world-class bench pressers, they do a lot of lat work.
Yeah.
You know, they do a lot of lat pull downs when they do like their fast twitch day, their high rep day, their volume stuff. Yeah. Cause then they get into too. Also, the wider your back is, the more you can wedge into the bench.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. You know, the thicker and wider your back is. But I've had sore lats from chest day, but it's been on like a lot of slingshots, you know, and a lot of bench.
How about you, Dave? I feel like for me, because I know a lot of people have said this, and that's why I said, like, I know that a lot of power lifters, well, they're going to engage everything. I feel like for me, I'm really focusing on making it specifically incline dumbbell press. That's like my jam, and I'm trying to get the best at it as I can. But when I lift, I know that, like, my elbows are out really wide when I press. Yeah. And I know that the way I'm engaging, it's like I'm almost, my lats feel like they're shut off almost.
Yeah, I mean, the idea is like, I mean, Scott, correct me if I'm wrong, but I mean, a lot of guys, especially I think that are very anterior delt dominant, taking over, if you're not high enough, you're going to use your lats for stabilization out of the hole, as Scott's saying. And you're also going to, I mean, first of all, too, like if you're doing a controlled press, you know, if you're controlling the negative on the way down, it's going to take your lats to stabilize you as well, right, Scott?
Yeah, especially if you wedge a lot.
Yeah.
You know, if you're wedging deep.
Right.
Go ahead.
No, so, I mean, Scott, do you pre-exhaust?
Me?
Like a pec deck?
I almost always do. I'll do a pec deck and then a press.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, so make sure there's enough of an arch. Make sure your elbows are back enough so you're not, you know.
Yeah.
You can take out your lats a little bit and your anterior delt by getting that. But, yeah, I mean, lats are, Scott, they're very explosive for you when you're pushing out of the hole, right?
Yeah, I think most guys that don't have problems out of the hole, and I never did, have pretty strong backs.
Hmm.
You know, pretty thick. Thick lats, you know, but like I've seen Scott McNally, I've seen you, I mean, on enough of your videos where you bench with a pretty flat back.
Yeah.
So you probably don't activate your lats a ton, you know, and, you know, I think it's critical that you have a good back. If you want to be a competitive bench presser, you got to have a good back.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. I've heard that before, but obviously that's out of my wheelhouse. Yeah, I never thought about my back, but yeah, I never thought about arching it either. I mean, I see the power lifters that, like, I saw some chick in the gym yesterday. Yeah, it was yesterday, who is like doing that whole powerlifting arch where her back is literally, you know, 5 inches, 6 inches off of the bench.
Yeah, some people like that. I never liked getting that arch. But I mean, I can take somebody. Let's say they can bench 250 and they don't have the greatest, they're pretty much flat, regular gym form. And probably just in 15 or 20 minutes of changing their form, put 25 or 30 pounds on their bench.
Hmm.
You know, especially if you get them a good bench, or, you know, a soft padded, a real powerlifting bench, like Texas Power benches or something like that. Not these things they have at the gyms, you know, the commercial gyms.
Yeah.
You can make a big difference in someone's.
Huh.
Just changing their form, put 25, 30 pounds on there.
All right. I'm going to go to a question that just popped up in the live feed. How to deal with a partially torn tricep muscle belly? Supplements?
Scott can answer this, but visually or cosmetic? I mean, cosmetically or just repairing? Or
I think he's trying to talk about, yeah, repairing.
Growth hormone. Dude, here's the thing. I've torn my bicep twice, some other stuff. You got to be patient, too. And a lot of people, they get really impatient, and it's counterproductive, especially with triceps. I mean, something like that. It's like a bicep tear. I mean, it's kind of a small muscle, but it can be real sensitive. And, you know, think about it. They're on your arms. You do everything with your arms. So, I mean, the last time I tore my bicep, I think I took about two months off maybe after they fixed it. And I started out with like zero on the cable curl. So like that little, it's not even the plate on the top with the little cables, and just started out with like 10 reps and then did two sets of 10 and then just worked my way up.
Hmm.
You gotta be real careful because, you know, once you tear biceps or triceps, especially, you're pretty susceptible to tear them again.
Yeah.
The way I've heard it is that, yeah, it's like take a piece of paper and rip it a little bit. Once that's there, if you keep messing around with that piece of paper, the only thing that's going to happen is it's just going to keep tearing.
Yeah. For sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a patience, and a lot of people don't have patience.
How about, I would suggest another one I'll throw in there is BPC 157. I found that for minor tweaks that it's been really beneficial for me. In fact, just general inflammation. I recently just used it. I trained legs pretty intensely and I ended up straining my hip flexor a little bit. It was to the point where like I couldn't lift my leg up to put my socks on. Like it hurt too bad. And it was like the kind of thing where my leg was so sore, but that as everything was getting better, that didn't get better. And it was overtaxed is really what it came down to. I just pushed it too hard. I had gone really heavy on the leg press is what it was. But I used BPC and it fixed it within a short period of time. Like I know that it dramatically, because I've had this kind of thing before and it dramatically shortened the time that it took to recover. Same with like my bicep tendon.
That was your knee that gave you issues?
No, it was my, it was like up in my hip flexor.
Oh yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
What's the peptide that encourages synovial fluid buildup in the joint again? Which one is that one?
I'm not sure.
I don't know. It's not the, I have to think about that one. My brain's not that warm.
Right.
But you like that. You like that.
That's why I forgot the name of it in the first place.
You like that 157 though, Scott. You're like 157 man.
Yeah. Well, you know, yeah. Cause sometimes on the show, Skip's not a big fan of peptides. And I think it's because the peptides he had looked into were like the stuff that where you had either melanotin, which he likes, or you had like, you know, ceramorelin, which was basically bullshit. You know what I mean? And it's like, this is a completely different thing. So I almost feel like I got to like preach it because it is so good.
I've heard nothing but good things about it.
Yeah. I would use it at higher doses though. I've gone now as high as 1 milligram a day in one shot. And I found it to be, you know, pretty helpful, but I just use it for short periods too. Now it's something like I've used it for tweaks and I'll just use it for like 4 days or 5 days. But I'm telling you, like I had told you guys on the show before, I had strained my bicep tendon here in my home gym because I wasn't used to kicking up my crappy dumbbells that I had at the time. And the bench was all rickety and it ended up straining my bicep tendon, trying to put them down. It ended up being, such an issue that I was feeling pain just sitting there. Like it was beyond pain with movement. It was like just throbbing as I sat there without movement. I took one shot of 1 milligram of BPC 157. And that night, like 2 hours later before bed, the pain was gone. And of course, I still was careful with it. I didn't go like an idiot and start training hard again with it. You know, I watched it, but I was able to get that inflammation under control. And then it never came back. It just basically healed itself. I took it for like 5 days and then I was done. So took one 5 milligram vial until it ran out at a milligram a day. TB 500, Matt Marshall just threw that in there. I've never used it.
TB 500.
Yeah.
See, now Dave asked this question a minute ago and my brain's been going on like in circles.
Yeah.
About what that peptide's called and I can't join the club. Let's forget about that question. I'll think about it for
30
minutes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
One of them does. I think the TB might actually, the 500 might be the one that does it.
TB 500 works as an anti-inflammant. I know that much.
Yeah. I don't think it's TB 500. It's,
fuck, I'm blanking on it.
Well, that's all right, guys. We're going to move on.
Okay. Let's move on.
All right. Let's see here. Optimal insulin timing and frequency for an off season. Do you think insulin alters a physique?
Yeah.
I mean, you know, it could be highly productive, you know. I mean, it could be highly productive, you know. I mean, some people there's a slippery slope. I mean, there's a fine line. It's like, you know, you use the right amount, you give your pancreas a rest a little bit. If you abuse it and use too much of it, and you start frying out, you know, the beta cells in your pancreas, you know, you're going to start, you know, lipolysis is going to happen. You're going to start losing sensitivity. It's going to work against you. When you lose sensitivity, you're screwed because you're just going to get fatter. You know, and it's a great, you know, for shuttling and stuff. But I think that, I mean, insulin's widely abused. I mean, if you're, you know, my theory is like a lot of the guys that are doing like, you know, tons of quick acting insulin going into the workout and then having to stabilize blood sugar into workout, like drinking jars of applesauce into workout. I mean, you know, and then to me, my thing is I like using it, you know, for the window periods of post-workout or in conjunction with using growth hormone in the morning, you know, like I like using Humulin R in the morning with growth hormone. If you happen to train during the window period that it's in you, because there's like, you know, Humulin R is about 6 hours. You have like kind of two peaks. So if you train during that 6 hour window period, you're theoretically going to have insulin going into that situation, you know, as well as having it in your system post, you know. You can use quick acting insulin post. I'm just really into either, you know, that window period post. I just, to me, I mean, I know a lot of guys use insulin going into the workout. I think what you're going to get is an aggressive pump. And again, you know, you're having to stabilize blood sugar intra. Like, I don't think it's necessarily productive to have, you know, glucose or other types of, you know, uptake, you know, intra workout. I think branched chain amino acids are fine, but I think you shouldn't be trying to stabilize blood sugar intra workout. I think I like using insulin, you know, post workout in that window period. And I think it's, you know, there's no need to use, you know, 40 units a day. I mean, I think you can use insulin over long with lower IU protocol over a longer period of time. You don't lose sensitivity, and it's, you know, productive. I think if you start, you know, like if you start with 30 units a day, where do you go from there? You know?
Yeah.
And you do have, you know, there's another hormone. I got news for you. There's a hormone, glucagon, that lowers insulin. And if you keep high amounts of insulin, glucagon, that's how you fry out the beta cells in your pancreas, and then you're fucked. You lost sensitivity
for life.
Yeah, you're exactly. You will get fatter from the insulin. And then keep in mind too, if you lose sensitivity, then there's less IGF acknowledgement in muscle cells, and you're really not going to grow. And stubborn fat loss, stubborn visceral fat loss. I mean, I like insulin. I just don't like these protocols that are just, you know, using Lantus, and, you know, the longest one I would use would be Humulin R. You know, I just don't know about the Lantus, the long duration. And, you know, again, I think if you're going to use too much of your fast acting insulin, you know, repetitively over and over and over again, pre-workout, post-workout, I think you're going to lose that sensitivity very quickly.
What do you think about, like, where should your body fat be at to even consider using insulin? Like, how is there a level where you're you would stop?
I mean, there's people who are just, they're born glucose intolerant, you know? I mean, there's people who, like, if you have a really high A1C, like, if you can't get your blood sugar under control just normally, I mean, keep in mind, let's just think about growth hormone. You know, it's like, well, this kind of goes into one of the questions, you know, is growth hormone, if you have carbs, you know, around the time you have growth, you take growth hormone. I mean, the growth hormone is going to work in terms of IGF production, all that stuff, with or without carbs, you know? But I mean, as far as, you know, if you have carbs, if you take a shot of growth hormone, you have carbs right afterwards, you know, the lipolysis is not going to happen. You're going to become like, you know, you're going to have lipogenesis is going to happen. You're going to start storing fat. So, you know, roundabout, if you're starting off and you're glucose intolerant and you're kind of fat to begin with, I'm not recommending you use insulin.
Okay.
You know, especially these people who they lose sensitivity, they become almost borderline type 2 diabetic from using growth hormone. I mean, if you're using growth hormone and you're having a high A1Cs, whatever, I mean, after a while, the insulin would kind of counteract that. But then I think you're going to be a good candidate for losing sensitivity very fast.
All right. Yeah. Legit question. I've been training after about 2 meals. I take 3 units of growth, and usually I've been taking it right before I train. I can move that around, but I'm not using any insulin now. Would you say that I'm in a place, Dave, where I could, would I be in a good position to use that? Or would you think, yeah, it doesn't matter, keep doing what you're doing?
I mean, you know, considering where your mass index is, you don't strike me as being very glucose intolerant. I think right now it would probably be kind of cool to implement a post-workout.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. When I had used it in the past, I went to pre And then I was shoveling down a lot of carbs while I trained.
Yeah, some people, I'm just really not about it. I mean, to me, you train, I mean, call me like one-on-one, call me very like kind of caveman like, but it's like you train to stimulate, and then there's a post-workout window period to shuttle and to message.
Yeah.
And I think you want to, you know, stimulate during the training and have your GI tract void of shoving down tons of intra stuff, except for BCAs, maybe a little bit of a glucose. But this whole idea of like, okay, well, I just took 10 units of, you know, Humalog, so now I have to have at least 100 grams of glucose or whatever circulating in my gut during training. I just,
yeah,
you know, yeah, I never liked you're better that. Off. Good idea, Scott.
I mean, I never liked that theory. I tried the pre. I don't like to drink shit when I'm working out anyway.
Yes.
So it, you know, that's when I started messing around with the post-workout stuff and the IGF and different things.
Yeah.
I got myself in trouble was when I started using it a lot, like every meal,
right?
You know, and I would say Lantus was probably the straw that broke the camel's back on that deal.
Yep.
And you get to a point where it's like, okay, you stay on it long enough and you're using 30 IUs a day. I wasn't using that many, but there's people that use that much or right. more. And then all of a sudden, where do you go from there? You're diabetic.
Exactly.
You know?
So exactly, like, to Scott's point, I mean, honestly, people laugh, like, oh, how much, you know, I'm like, if you're using Humulin R in the morning, you know, think about it. Like, if you use insulin with your GH, you're going to get more of an aggressive IGF. Your liver's going to turn more of it, and you're going to have IGF, a big, you know, nice punch of it. I just... Rather than like exactly at 30 units, where do you go from there? I mean, just by doing like, I have my guys do like 6 or 7 I use at the most of Humulin R in the morning. And then if they use something post workout, it would be like 8 to 10 I use of Humalog. And honestly, like that's it.
Yeah.
And I find that you can get tons of productivity for a very long duration of time without losing that sensitivity. You know, you, I don't know the analogy. You use too much of it, right? You know, you're going to burn. You're going to reap less and less. You're going to become type 2, and you're going to be fat, and you're going to have stubborn visceral fat, and you're fucked. You lose that sensitivity. Yeah. You're done. That's why you see a lot of these guys, a lot of bodybuilders, after a while, like all of a sudden they just peak, and then they're not really like getting in shape anymore at these shows, and they're not building anymore. I think it's so much of that has to do with that lack of sensitivity or that loss of sensitivity from these dynamically huge protocols of insulin chasing tons of sugar into work. I think you're gonna fuck yourself.
All right. So how about okay? So you said can't get in shape. What about using insulin during a prep?
Sometimes it's very productive. I think it's great when sometimes. You know, if you're really lean and let's say there's a high carb day scheduled, you know, using insulin that day is great because you're going to get messaging and stuff. And you see, I seem to get like it's almost like a cool metabolic reaction from it too. You know, you kind of give your pancreas a break for that one high carb day, you know, and you then can shuttle repair whatever and get right back to it.
Okay.
You know, yeah. I think, there's times with the right athlete and with the right sensitivity that's already there. Insulin on some days, on high carb days, whatever, during prep can be very beneficial. Yeah.
Okay.
Definitely.
And that's where I see it as more of a better tool, you know, to use isolated. I know a friend of mine that, you know, I mean, he was using it as his primary performance enhancing drug to grow, and he was taking a ton of it, and he's had problems ever since. And
yeah,
you know, I think you just from anecdotally and from seeing other people, if you use it sparingly as a certain tool to shuttle, right. You know, during those phases, like especially if you're doing a carb cycle or a, you know, 4 or 5 days of very low or no carbs and you're loading heavy, it's perfect, and you're not going to have any health problems after it,
right?
But you start dicking around with that stuff, it'll bury you.
It's true.
Yeah.
I mean, Scott, to your point, you know, you're low for 4 days. You're going to have great sensitivity going into that. That's how it's used. That's how I can't phrase it any better. That's exactly, you should use it. But people become, all I could say is stay ahead of the loss of sensitivity. Use it sparingly. It's a good tool. Use it sparingly. God, I hate these analogies. Use it as a tool, not a crutch. It should not be the meat and potatoes of getting bigger.
Gotcha.
I'd say one of the biggest things is if you're using it, regardless of the amount, when you stop using it, if you start having a lot of blood sugar problems and they don't go away, I'm talking for weeks and a month, 2 months, and you're constantly battling, you know, going hypo and all that. Your blood sugar levels are not stable in the morning. They're all over the place. Then that tells you right there that you overrode the line.
Hmm. Yeah. You fucked off your pancreas and you burned out your beta cells in your pancreas, mm-hmm. and all the glucagon in the world won't be able to lower your blood sugar. That's correct.
Hey, what's up, guys? I'm going to jump in to shout out our great sponsors, and then we will get right back to the show. Also, I hope everybody's doing good. I hope if you're back in the gym grinding, more power to you. If you're still locked down, my heart is with you. And no matter where you're at, I hope everybody's being safe and that everybody is healthy right now. All right, so TrueNutrition.com. I've got an A, a B, and a C, and then we will cut out of that. So A, they are owned by Dante Trudell, one of the most honest people in our industry. Plus, the products are all third-party tested. So you're getting a high-quality supplement. B, they fantastic pricing. I mean, you're getting wholesale pricing. And then on top of that, if you're to order a protein powder, let's say you order 5 pounds, they add the flavoring after they measure out the protein. So you're really getting close to 6 pounds. You're not going to get 6 pounds of product from Dymatize. If you order 5 pounds, you get 5 pounds of product, period. That's just the way that it goes. And then C, they've partnered with us. So here's the deal. You buy stuff that you would have bought anyway, say their protein powder or fish oil, possibly, or maybe a performance supplement like the Abolic or the highly branched cyclic dextrin, the Mountain Dog formula, Perry MD. Any of the stuff that you would have bought anyway, if you buy it from True Nutrition and you use our code ADVICES, then it helps to support our programming. And I can keep the lights on here and I can keep podcasting. And I laugh, but that's dead serious. So TrueNutrition.com, use our code ADVICES to buy stuff that you would have bought anyway and support the programming. Okay, so I'm going to move on to Azoth. Get Azoth.com. Oh, somebody recently asked, how do you spell Azoth? It's A-Z-O-T-H. I guess this stuff wasn't in the description in the iTunes, but it should have been. So hopefully we've got it all sorted out and it is there now. But Azoth, so this is a fantastic nootropic product. I've been using Azoth now since the jump, since they started. They're on Azoth 2.0 now. And they also have a couple other products that contain Zynamite, which is a dopamine reuptake inhibitor. What does dopamine do? Dopamine is that thing that makes you want more, to get more, to try harder, to dive in. It's basically, aggression isn't the right word, but it's that like go-to-itness that gives you that drive to get things done, and it keeps you on task. So this is basically what nootropics are there to do. They're there to A, kind of like keep you calm and ready and excited to do what you're going to do, and then to keep you on task, keep you focused, keep you sharp. That's basically, that's going to sum up what Azoth is. So check their stuff out. You can go to getazoth.com, A-Z-O-T-H, or go to the Amazon link in our notes. Either place, you can use our code ADVICES10 if you want to improve your edge in life. And as they say, quote, get shit done. Check them out and let me know what you think. All right, guys, let's get back to the program. Thanks for listening to me.
All right, I'm going to go on to that topic that Dave had mentioned. We got some questions about growth hormone. Figure it'd be a good time to tie them in right here. This is from Walter. He posted this over at the Advices Radio group. If you guys haven't joined, head on over. We take questions for the shows over there and all of that. Okay, Walter says, so I've heard the carbohydrates blunt the effects of growth hormone. That's why it's said that it's best to not eat carbs an hour on both ends of taking it. So I have a few questions. Does this apply to naturally occurring GH and exogenous GH2 or just naturally, whereas exogenous doesn't suffer from blunting effects on carbs? I'll just stop there. He's got some more questions.
I mean, as far as the natural one, you're not going to really have much of a kick. If you wake up in the morning and have a big bowl of, you know, Captain Crunch, you're not going to have a really good morning GH pulse, you know?
Yeah.
I think that's a little bit of a chicken and the egg there, because your natural GH releases during, you know, times of stress, during times of, you know, in between meals, you know, sleep patterns, kick it off or first thing in the morning. I mean, as far as using it, like you're going to blunt fat loss. You'll blunt lipolysis if you have carbs. If you take a shot and you have carbs right away, the GH is going to work as far as like the muscle growth, the volumization, you know, the IGF response, all that stuff. But as far as the fat loss, yeah, if you have carbs right around it, you would interfere with that.
Yeah.
Sure.
Yep.
Yeah. Okay. Does fat and protein cause the same blunting? Can I eat fats and peanut butter and protein around GH? I mean, anything's going to spike insulin to some extent.
Well, I mean, like, well, yeah. I mean, like, if you like too much arginine, is going to spike your insulin. You know what I mean? You know, if you have a bunch of saturated fats, you can indirectly have an insulin spike from saturated fats. You know.
I'd say the only time fat could be problematic is if you're on an extremely high fat diet with no carbs.
Oh, yeah.
And so your That's body, right. you're using, you know, you're using that conversion of fat to fill your glucose stores and stuff. Now that there, I think that's the only place you could see an issue. And I don't know that for sure, but it would make sense.
Yeah. Like if you're exactly right. I mean, if you, after a while, you know, your body will make glucose, you know, it makes that protein, it's gluconeogenesis. And as Scott's saying, if you're just keto, you know, your body will eventually you'll translate from fats to carbs. And there's that gluconeogenic thing that he's talking about but you would have to have, as he was saying, very high, just pure tons of just junky fat, I think.
Yeah.
You'd have to be a high fat. You'd have to have a really high fat diet.
Yeah.
All right. Now if you're not focusing on fat loss, then this isn't really an issue, right? Like this is only if you were dieting, really.
Yeah.
True. And keep in mind, like, you know, the idea is that you would, if you're trying to get bigger, let's say there is insulin use, you know, there's growth hormone, there's insulin, and then there's going to be a definite density of carbs in that window period after that insulin shot or growth hormone anyway. So,
yeah. So then in that case, it's not as big of an issue it's not going to stop. I guess that's the thing. And you did kind of say that, but I want to make sure he understands that, like you had said, the growth hormone is still going to work. It's not like it renders it, you know, useless or something.
Yeah.
Right.
It's
going to work in terms of the volumizing and everything that growth hormone does. But long story short, the only thing it'll impede would be, you know, the fat loss.
Okay. I know that for me to be safe with that, I would do my cardio or some of my cardio fasted, and I would take it, you know, wake up in the morning, take the growth.
That's just the best time anyway. No matter what, taking growth hormone fasted, you know, you're going to utilize it better anyway.
Yeah. And then cardio too, for me at least. I know that I've heard it said that maybe not everybody is going to make the best progress. Like for some people it'll work better than other, but for me, fasted cardio, and a lot of people I've worked with, it seems like fasted cardio seems to work pretty well.
There's no doubt.
What's cardio?
What's cardio?
All right. And third question, can you grow on 2 units of pharmaceutical growth hormone? Or let's just say a good generic, because I feel like I've had good generics that are just as good as farm grade. So,
Scott?
Yeah, I mean, so, okay. Questions like this are so impossible to answer, because I would have to take you and train you for a year, not on 2 units of growth hormone a day. And then we'd have to repeat the process with 2 and then compare the results and then do that every other year. I mean, I think I'm a big fan of that low grade, you know, 2 or 3 IUs every other day, keep your IGF levels up. It works great for the old guys, you know, all the yoked old guys are doing it. And, but I don't think there's a really, I don't think if you did it 2 IUs a day or you didn't, you'd really know the difference in muscle,
right?
In the muscle you put on, yeah. As long as you did everything else the same.
Yeah. You know? I mean, you could take someone on 4 I use of farm grade, and you who's and they're not busting their ass in the gym, they're not eating correctly, and you could take someone who's just an animal in the gym, who's training their ass off, eating enough, that person will grow more and respond better, you know, than the person using, you know, the growth on myself. So yeah, I mean,
yeah, I think this is why the big GH days have kind of flown the coop, because people have realized that it's just not the bang for the buck. You're not getting what you think you're getting out of it. So yeah. I just say take 2 or 3 every other day and stay on it forever.
Yeah, I remember when everybody on the boards was doing like 10, you know, not everybody, 20. But there were a lot. Yeah, there were guys that were doing 20. You're right. That's nuts, man. Yeah.
Well, just like insulin, too much of the growth hormone, you're going to ironically run into the same problems.
Yep.
Yeah.
Blood sugar.
All right. Let's see here. What else do we have? I know we had a bunch of questions left. Ooh, here's one we haven't really covered a lot. We've got to
get to that T&E question.
Yeah, that's what I was just looking at. The best way to run test no ester, T&E.
Okay.
What's a good protocol
for
that?
So here's the deal. I'm not all these like test no ester, test no ester, trend no ester. Okay, these are like basically, I mean, you might as well just use check drops, which is basically like, you know, like check drops are basically is nandrolone no ester. You know,
is that what that honestly, is? I never knew much about
it. Yeah. It is. Yeah. So
no
basically
kidding.
Like, huh. Okay. So these no ester drugs, okay. We're just, all it is it's an androgen that's going to get in your system really quickly and leave your system quickly. There's no, you can't build any muscle on these no ester steroids. There's not a long enough half-life. There's no receptor binding because of the lack of duration of the half-life. So if you take test no ester, check drops, trend no ester, you're going to be angry, irritated, have your blood pressure come up, have a good pump in the gym, and it'll dissipate.
No. What about this? I'll challenge you. I'm playing devil's advocate, basically.
All right.
What if I take check drops or test no ester? Trend no ester just gives me nightmares thinking about that.
Check drops.
What if I go to the gym and then I lift substantially heavier every time I train?
No, I mean, okay. So from a strength standpoint, or like from if you want to bite someone's ear off in the case of check drops, you know, Mike Tyson, Van Rolito, whatever, like, no, it's going to, of course, it can make you aggressive and strong, you know, but I mean, like, honestly, if you're focused on trying to get bigger, if you need, I think you can raise enough intensity to mechanically move a weight from point A to point B with more reps or more weight, with or without a non-ester steroid.
Yeah, okay.
I mean, I don't know. I mean, I know that's not a very sexy answer, but I think people really just, I mean, okay, powerlifting, you know, like training, whatever, but I just think like, I don't know, drink a fucking cup of coffee before or good. I don't know. I'm just really not into these no ester stuff. You know, people are like, oh,
kind of, I mean, the problem is that most people that are into them weren't around when suspension was around.
Right.
And so when the suspension was the thing, well, how many, you know, fall 4 or 5 times a day, you had to inject it.
God,
because you know you're like crash and burn man, and I mean the no ester stuff is, I think the acronym just sounded cool, and some they figured we'd just start right. Selling it, you know. It's true. I mean, unless you just want some psychological, you know, just exactly. Take Matterol or something before you train.
That's what I'm saying, man. Or a good strong cup of coffee. Ready for this, to the listener? There's no top like bodybuilders who are using this. Like there's no like Olympia, like competitors like, okay, I'm going to take a shot of test and lesser before it's just not happening. As Scott said, on paper, it's sexy, blah, blah, blah. But it's just one of these things where like, it's just you strengthen aggression. You will not build any muscle using any of these compounds. I don't care how many times a day you inject it.
All right.
I thought that, are they still popular? The T&Es and all that? I mean, is it still, I thought they kind of died, or they were popular, what, 4 or 5 years ago?
Yeah, they were popular. I used it before, and I definitely got like a boost from it in the gym, but I don't think,
no doubt.
You know, I don't think I got any kind of growth from it though.
You won't build any muscle from it.
All right. Let's see. So, go off completely Palumbo style or TRT for your clients?
TRT. Well, yeah. That's dependent on, I shouldn't have said it that fast, because I'd say if it was somebody that was wanting to do one short cycle a year, maybe come off. Yeah. But outside of that, I mean, if you're going to spend 4 or more months on gear a year, you just stay on TRT.
Yeah, I mean, like, the whole idea of, like, when you're off, be off. But rather than, like, forcing your hypothalamus into making luteinizing hormone, why not just replace what your body would produce in the first place?
What about, is there an age factor in there? What if this guy is, like, 23? Yeah, like,
I mean,
like,
okay, well, first of all, what Scott's saying, if you're just going to do, like, your one little, like, you know, cycle for the year, like, I mean, I could see maybe coming off and, you know, trying to, you know, going the ACG, you know, Clomid route, you know. But, again, I'm so against forcing your hypothalamus into making luteinizing hormone. Again, just replace what you're normally produced. But if you're, like, in your 20s or whatever, I mean, like, there could be some, you know, advantage. But I just, again, even then, just like when you're off cycle, you're off, you take replacement testosterone. And then when you're on, you're on. And one question, I don't know, this kind of segues into it. I think one of the listeners said, well, what's a good steroid to accompany your TRT? Wasn't that one of the questions?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
Something that would be so like low side effect.
Yeah, I mean, but if the idea of you're off cycle, your TRT is because you're off cycle.
I think this guy though was saying like he doesn't really, he just wants to run his TRT and then that would be his cycle.
Well, then, I mean, if anything, use 20 milligrams of Anabarite to uncouple more free testosterone.
Yeah.
Proviron, whatever.
Proviron, I mean, exactly. Some type of DHE derivatives.
It always blows my mind when people talk about TRT and then they start talking about adding all this stuff to it. TRT is right. Testosterone replacement therapy.
Right. I think knowing this guy though, right. What he was saying is that he wasn't like gonna do a cycle ever. He was just like that was gonna be his cycle. Like what would be something low side effect to add? I think that's what he was saying.
Let me ask you guys, TRT a cycle? I mean, if
life cycle.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, use 20 milligrams of Proviron or Anavar to theoretically, you know, uncouple more and make more free testosterone.
I'll say something else. I'll say something low side effect. How about, definitely Anavar. I wouldn't say Proviron because I don't feel like you're going to get, I mean, maybe you do get more free test with it, but I feel like you would get more out of 50 Anavar than you would growth wise, strength wise. And that would be like a way to, you could add that to do like a little, and you know, I mean, I guess you could call that, you know, I think he was saying like a cycle basically. Let's see if I can find the question here, but he was basically saying, here it is. What's a steroid that complements TRT without hurting your blood pressure too badly? Okay. So he wants to stay on his TRT dose of test and then add something on top of that for a while without getting blood pressure issues. That's what it was.
Maybe don't eat tons and tons and tons of junk food and make sure you're not having blood pressure issues to begin with. Your sodium levels not cranked out of crazy and you're not hypotensive genetically to begin with. I don't know.
Yeah. So basically
do cardio.
Yeah.
Do some cardio.
I mean, 200 milligrams a week, even I just had my labs done. I was 1154.
Really? Wow.
Mm. And so, I mean, that's about normal for me. My free testosterone was like, I forget, 600, almost 600, 5 something, 575. Estradiol was 52 or 1. I'll tell you what I was doing, though. I was taking too much Arimidex because I got this feeling that I was like mine was too high for some reason for a while, and I kind of overdid it the other direction. So I actually have backed way off of it.
Hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. So those labs really help. You know, when you get labs, you can actually see what's going on.
Yeah.
Yep. I recommend for people if they want to kind of control estradiol on TRT, you know, the idea is that you take a milligram of Arimidex 12 hours after you take the testosterone. Because, you know, theoretically, like the half-life really starts to peak at 12 hours after post-injection.
Hmm.
And if you introduce the Arimidex then you're going to offset the estradiol development without having to continuously, like, you know, it's funny, a lot of these guys will do TRT, but then they're doing 3 or 4 milligrams of Arimidex a week.
Hmm.
If you get your estradiol too low, then, you know.
Yeah. That's not good anymore. Yeah, I mean, I was trying to do it by feel for a while.
Yeah.
And even after I've been on TRT for what, 20 years, my feel gauges weren't that good.
Right.
And So, yeah, I thought 1154 was pretty good.
That's great, that's man. Excellent.
And it's $550 to $600 bucks on your free. That's excellent.
Yeah. You know what's funny is my free's always been high.
Yeah.
I've always had, yeah. I've never, you know, I've seen a lot of blood work and seen guys that are at, you know, 1500, 1600, and their free's like 200 or 150 or whatever. Yep. Even when their estradiol's not that high, mine's always been high. Must be my good looks. I don't know. That's what I'm thinking.
All right. Let's see
it's
here.
It's not easy being strikingly handsome, I can attest.
Yep.
Someone asked, what exercises can I do with two resistance bands? I'm going to tell him to go to John Meadows' YouTube page, because John has all sorts of videos on doing like at-home workouts that are really good. Any lifts that you think a 40-plus-year-old should at least consider avoiding in general, or avoiding as general guidance for longevity?
Scott? I mean, okay, if you have prior, this would be based too off of some prior, you know, injuries and stuff. But, you know, I think when you start getting up there, I'm not saying you can totally avoid pulling deads or, you know, rows or squat. You know, some people with squats when they get a little older. But I mean, if you're going to do some of those compound heavy, you know, compound movements that are generally heavier movements, like pulling deads, you need to be careful, warm up. You need to back off the weight. Don't try to get crazy. I think bent over rows is one that, especially barbell rows, is one that can really jack you up when you get older.
Hmm.
Yeah. You know, you got to be careful with that one. But pulling deads, you know, you got to watch your form. I mean, I think the worst ever hurt my back was in a leg sled, let my hips come off the pad.
Oh God, yeah.
A couple times, and it was not pretty. So I don't think there's anything you have to avoid, but you have to be. I think you got to be smart, make good choices, you know, what you're doing.
I was training with a guy who is actually, I met him through the podcast. He listens to our shows. He's local here. We trained legs, and I watched him. He was coming down so low on the leg press that his hips, his butt would curl up off the pad every rep. I was like, oh man. I told him, like, I was like, I don't know if you should do that. I don't think that's a good idea. I told him that's how I hurt my back pretty bad doing that too.
That'll bury you. You do that enough.
Yep.
Oh. Yeah.
Let's see. What about squats? I feel like a lot of older guys don't do squats anymore.
I don't think a lot of people do squats anymore.
That's a good point.
Yeah, the squat rack is pretty empty in most gyms.
Yeah.
Yeah, and unless you curl in the squat rack.
All right. Another training question here. How about talk about priming your quad training. Do you do any kind of, like, what do you think about pre-fatiguing, Dave? Is there ever a case where you have your guys do that? Yeah,
I'm huge on that. I'll go to the point where I'll have people go on the stationary bike for 6 or 7 minutes first.
Really? Okay. Yeah.
And then leg extensions, and then leg curls, and actually calves and everything, like, starting off first, and then squatting. Huh. You know, I think, you know, Scott can attest, you know, people will find any excuse in the world not to squat. Call us old fashioned, but shut up and squat. You know, I mean, like, there's just nothing that mimics that movement. And, but you have to go into it prepared. I'm not saying, you know, some people rap on 135, you know, I think that's extreme, but
yeah.
You know, I mean, you want to be connective tissue ready for it. Some people definitely need extended warmups, and some people need to get, you know, their knees more. I mean, that connective tissue, you want it pliable, you know, as a cold rubber band tears easily. I think pre-exhaustion and warming up, and, you know, with, you know, again, like, you know, people sometimes stretch when they're cold too. That's obviously, you know, counterproductive. You need to prime. I think pre-exhausting, just from the fact that, you know, you want to just, instead of just, you want to eliminate hip flexors or knees when you're leg press, when you're squatting. So if you pre-exhaust your legs, you're going to use more quad, you know, less hamstring and glute, less hip flexor. So from that standpoint, but just from a knee, the integrity of your knee, some people really do need prolonged warm-ups, you know, like warming up on the bike, whatever, extensions, leg curls.
We looked at, you know, Dorian's video today, Dorian Haywood's leg video. What does his leg training look like? I mean, because he's got ridiculous legs. So, like, basically, I'm asking you, lay it on us. For a guy that has legs like him, what does it take?
I put him through a leg workout last week. For example, I mean, you know, squatting was, of course, his bread and butter. So, but for example, like, well, last week we didn't squat, but we did, you know, extensions, curls, calves, everything. We went to leg press. We did ascending sets. So in other words, the first set was like four plates on each side. I had him do 20 reps. I put a plate on each side. You know, I just had him rack the weight, plate on each side. Had him do 15 reps. Added another plate to each side. Had him do 12 reps. Hmm. That ascending set is his warm-up set.
Yeah.
And then we started adding plates where then we started controlled negative on the way down, you know, explosive without locking out of the knee, controlled negative on the descent. We worked up to, you know, we pyramided up, and then we had one long strip set. We then went to the Icarian hack squat, started off with a couple plates, went up, you know, six or seven plates, large drop set. And with every rep, though, there's a controlled negative where when he's leg pressing or hack squatting, the depth is all the way down. We're coming maybe 80% of the way up. As soon as we're 80% of the way up, we start the controlled negative.
Yeah.
You know, we're not resting on the knees, snapping out. I mean, there's people who move tons and tons of weight, but they're just using momentum and snapping out, resting on the knees, and then, you know, just bouncing down. And so there's different types of strength, you know, controlling the negative and being explosive without locking out. And using progressive overload with either more reps for the same weight or heavier weight with the same reps for the next time you train is going to require you to muster up more intensity to get that done.
Yeah. So, yeah, I found that one of the things I've really been doing, and I think this has been one of the things that's helped me with the progress I've been making, is my negatives. And this goes across the board for everything. I'm more controlled and slow with my negatives than I ever have been. And getting to work with more of my clients now, like I've been having most of them, like more and more of them. I'd be curious if I don't see the progress that we want, then I'll be like, let me see what these exercises look like, you know? And I can see, it's like I'm seeing so many people that just aren't getting enough out of their negative portion of the rep. It's just, that seems like it's such a common thing.
I can't even emphasize the importance of that. I know, Scott, I mean, that's what's going to build the density to that tissue.
Yeah. I really, you know, think like that's true.
Yeah, the explosive stuff. If you could, I mean, you know, like the quick, the pumping explosive stuff. You see these guys, they volumize very quickly, but they lose that density. You know, that real fibrous looking density comes from these negatives.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was always a big negative.
You can't lift as much weight.
I think I did more out of boredom years ago because it made things different. You know?
Yeah.
But yeah, I like negatives.
Yeah, you can't. The thing is you, that it's like you can't lift as much weight. So I think that people get it in their head that they would rather go up, you know, a dumbbell.
It's
up.
It's harder.
You know, yeah.
It's harder.
Yeah.
And yeah, from an ego standpoint, yeah, you're not gonna have like these, you know, let's see if everyone's looking at the gym. Willis, I load up all these 45-pound plates and fucking bounce it.
Yeah.
Ego lifting. Yeah, if you want to use negatives, as you guys are saying. You can't be an ego lifter.
Yeah. And even beside ego, if you're just like, hey, I want to get big, that means I need to lift as much weight as possible. I don't want to waste all my time on this negative. I feel like that's part of it too, you know?
Sure. Of course.
Yeah. Of course. You know?
It's like the guys that only do lifts they're really strong at because they're in front of people and they do them every week. But why don't you do something you're not so strong at? And right. I think it'll work out better in the long run.
Right.
You know, I'll admit it. I've been that way before. It's like, oh yeah, you know, I can press, I can put six plates on a hammer strength incline press and knock out 12 reps. It looks really good. But, you know, then I finally realized, you know, I'm not getting much out of this other than, you know, hopefully not dropping the plates off the side of the hammer strength thing, you know? Yeah. So you got to do stuff you're not that great at.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's why people don't like to squat. And a lot of people don't like to do barbell rows. You know, it's, you know, it's sexy. You're doing a, you know, quick ass leg press or a hammer strength row compared to, you know,
Yeah.
Well, I think more people incline press than flat press because they're stronger in the incline because it naturally wedges you and they don't realize it. But, you know, I would say more people incline press than they will flat press.
Yeah. Why is that?
Yeah. Because you're stronger in the incline.
Are you? I always thought you were weaker in the incline.
No, no, you're stronger because it's forcing you into that wedge position. You don't even know it's forcing you in there.
Oh, okay. Huh, okay.
I mean, and it's relevant too. So if a guy can incline 225 for six reps, that looks better than flat benching 225 for eight.
Exactly.
Yeah. Exactly. Okay.
See what I'm saying? Exactly.
Yeah. I do
That's
the incline.
Where the part comes in.
I do the incline because for me, it's the part that I have issues with is kicking the dumbbells up, that bicep tendon. So if I have to go to the flat bench, getting them in, like laying down and putting them in position is harder versus on incline, I just like pop it, you know what I mean? And then I don't have to like pull it up as much. So that's my reasoning. But I always thought that. I always thought, guys, I thought you were stronger. I don't do both though anymore.
I think I'm talking about like relevance of the
gym. He means relative, like, right, Scott? Like you could total more on the flat, but he's talking about like, you know,
I see. It's more. It's like more impressive if you can do it on incline.
More socially acceptable to incline 225 for six than flat bench.
It took me. I get it. You know. I get it.
Right.
Yeah. All right. So while we're talking about pre-fatiguing, let's talk some exercises. What about for hamstrings? What would be some good stuff? What would be some good ideas for that? Like, what would that look like if you wanted to pre-exhaust your hamstrings going into a leg workout?
I'll tell you the one thing I always use for leg workouts was the step mill, the Stairmaster, where it rotates around and do about 6 minutes pretty slow and skip a step. And you will warm your legs up more than you ever thought you could.
The whole thing then, or your
hams, quads, whatever. You know, you can switch the step, but you can go double steps if you're going more hamstring and switch back to one step. And I used to train with a guy and he's a pretty big dude. And that's what we used to do was the Stairmaster, the one that rotates for 6 minutes prior to starting leg day, doing that on a slow speed, nothing fast. And your legs, your IT bands, your hips, everything just gets nice and warmed up.
Ask Kai Green. Kai Green does 30 minutes of leg, 30 minutes of step mill, followed by 30 minutes of stretching, followed by 30 minutes of abs, and then he's ready to train legs.
Yeah. I've seen him do that at Gold's.
Have you?
Years ago.
Yeah. Man, he is so freaky. He's still so freaky today.
Yeah.
What's he up to? Is he, what's his status?
He's making a TV or a YouTube show now. He's got his own variety show. Dave, have you seen that? Did you see that variety show he put together?
I sure. That's why he's doing this thing with where he's filming with the big Afro wig. And
yes. Yeah.
I guess I love Kai, but I guess, the site, it's hard to unring a bell. It's hard to unsee. We all saw that last week. Scott, I know you saw it too. Both Scott's, right?
I saw it. Yeah. He dressed up as Tina Turner.
You got to love Kai, though. Like, he actually, when people are always about, the grapefruit, of course, they mention the grapefruit to this day still. And I think he teased, he's saying, he's going to make a supplement company. He's going to make a supplement that's going to, be grapefruit flavored and all that. And
does he say that?
You got to give him credit,
That's funny, man.
It's a pretty hot grapefruit.
Man. Yeah, his TV show. He's got S2H, he has he has a variety show that he put out on YouTube, and it's the weirdest
thing. He's not going to compete.
You don't think it's going to happen?
No.
Could he? From what you've seen of him, could he?
Well, the thing is, it's obviously he has a timeless physique, and you can still tell he's huge, whatever. But, it's been years.
Yeah.
On paper, yes. But, there's something about being out of the sequence for a couple of years, 4 years, where it's – to get acclimated back, it's just it doesn't always come out the way you would think.
Yeah.
And I'm sure his life's pretty busy, now. And,
right.
But yeah, it's I'll probably never watch his YouTube channel. So I think I'm safe on that one right there.
Yeah. All right. I know we covered this one before with you, Dave, but we're going to do it again. Thoughts on SARMs. This was to me, thoughts on SARMs and have you tried them? I will say no, guys. I have not tried SARMs, and then I'll let Dave take it.
The only SARMs I like are the ones that have the most side effects. Okay, the S4 is the strongest.
Yeah.
Okay. I don't care what anybody says. You're going to see yellow after a couple of weeks, but that is the strongest one. So you know, there's the Austrian, which is the S22, which is a subdivision of that one. It's in the same mechanism, less vision problems, almost as strong.
Yeah.
I think the other ones are useless. I think the only ones you actually see where you're growing will be the S4 or the Austrian 22.
The YK. You don't like YK?
No. I just don't. I don't. I mean, call me old school, but like for example, the only IGF I like is the long R3.
Okay.
Yeah, and you know, if you're going to use the S4, you know when it really works, honestly, is speaking of TRT, use it in between cycles where you're just using TRT. One thing I could say is that I've seen a couple of people where they did it. Now, you know, it's a selective androgen receptor modulator. There's something to more androgen acknowledgement when you go back on cycle after using the SARM. I can't explain how or the mechanism, but it just seems to make the steroids be more productive after using it. I can't explain how.
It helps, and it actually expands the receptor. I don't know if that's the best way to put it.
I know you're saying it's just there's more. How do we say it, Scott? There's more androgen acknowledgement
signaling.
There's true. It's a waste of time to take during the cycle. I think you want to take it. Yeah.
I mean, being a guy that looks like me that used to be a affiliated with the company that brought it on the market, basically.
Yeah. Yeah, they did.
I can say that I found it pretty, I mean, your girl's not going to like this comment, but I found it worked really well for women. We've had this debate before, Dave, you were on the show.
Osterine?
Yeah.
Yeah, she's not a science fan
of that, no. But I think it works pretty good for chicks. I mean, I've used it. I mean, it was in front of me, you know. I think at that point in time, the rest of the way my plan, everything was going, it wasn't noticeable for me much. But, you know, that's like saying, hey, I'm going to add 20 milligrams of Anavar to my 100 milligrams of Anadrol a day. You know, you're probably not going to notice it a whole lot.
Yeah.
But I think it works. I mean, I think it's got S4. I took S4 for a while, a couple of times, and didn't really bother me. I didn't get any, you know, people talking about your face turning orange and, you know, you're going to get jaundice and all these things. And I never had a problem with it. But
no, yeah, I don't think it theoretically it's hepatically stressful, but I've never heard of anybody, neither of you, Scott, who's had like real like jaundice. I mean, the only thing is like it does your vision.
Mm-hmm.
I remember I took it, man. After a couple of weeks, I was driving and like, I'm like looking at the lights, you know, I'm like, wow. I mean, like you look at paper and it's like there's a yellow hue to it.
Yeah. That's scary.
Yeah.
All right. You mentioned
the YK. I
it's a waste of fucking money.
Really?
That was just one that got overhyped.
Yeah. Yeah. Huh.
Yeah.
Honestly, I still have some that I was given some like when it first came out. And I used it for a few days, and I started getting acne on my biceps, and then I stopped using it. Never got into it.
Yeah, it's just it's not going to do anything.
All right.
I mean, if we actually sit here and really like use our 10 brain cells all together, think of all the things that were the latest, greatest, that were going to be the best ever.
Yeah.
That you don't ever hear about anymore. You know, especially when the message boards were really hot. I mean, it was like every 6 months there was another greatest thing to ever be developed on earth, you know, and then 5 years later, you never hear about it again.
All right.
You can't reinventing the wheel.
Dave, you mentioned IGF and liking IGF LR3. What if hypothetical situation, there's a guy who has a few vials of it that is like 2 years old. Do you think it still works? It's been in the fridge the whole time.
Frozen or refrigerator?
The fridge the whole time.
Good point.
Freezer, I'd say go for it. Refrigerator. Yeah.
Nope. No. He's right.
Yeah.
But you got it. You got it. It's just using.
Yeah, he may have tried like 100 micrograms pre-workout and didn't feel any pump or anything.
It'll denature after a while if it's not frozen.
Yeah, all right.
That's my favorite, LR3. That was my bomb. That was the one I fell into accidentally one time and with Torrent. Remember Torrent, the carb Torrent? That was a post-workout, LR3 and Torrent.
Yep.
Yeah.
Only long R3. I know it's not, call me old-fashioned, whatever. That's the only IGF that's going to do anything.
When would you say that's most beneficial? Before training, after training?
Post.
Post?
And not a lot. Yeah, post.
Yeah.
But, I mean, not a lot. I mean, basically, it's like this. Some people, like, okay, here we go, sensitivity. Some of these guys will, like, start off 100 micrograms post-workout. After 6 days, it won't do anything.
Yeah. What if you only took it, what if you only trained 4 days a week?
Yeah, great. Even better.
But I mean, that 100 micrograms then, is it going to stop working?
No, I mean, why not just, basically like, I don't know, 30 micrograms post for 2 weeks, 60 micrograms, then 60 micrograms post for 2 weeks, then taking 2 weeks off, then repeating.
Okay.
That's pretty much, I think you can go
for most of it. Was 30 days. And at 30 days, it was starting to lose its luster.
Yeah, so basically it's 4 weeks on, 2 weeks off. After 30 days, it will not work.
Okay.
It works good post-workout.
Oh, yeah. That's
you get some wicked pumps from it. I mean, it's like I had veins pop out of the top of my head and shit.
Yeah.
With Torrent, which no one would ever take Torrent. I don't think they make Torrent anymore. But, you know, it's not the popular one. Yeah. The only bad part is it's got that, like, jelly. It doesn't mix very well. The carb Torrent. Kind of jelly-ish, you know? So you got to kind of suck it down pretty quick.
All right. So what was that mustache question, Dave? Somebody asked.
Okay, first of all.
Does Dave know?
Let's cut to the chase.
Yeah.
We got to take a listener poll. You need a fucking porn stash.
Yeah, I can't.
To do with the glasses? Scott, you concur?
The other glasses, yeah.
Yeah.
I don't like the facial hair. It just doesn't. I get irritated by it, and then I just want to shave it off.
Okay, I'll take it a step further. A porn stash and grow a Kerry King beard with beads.
Just like that long goatee thing.
Yeah.
I think you should
But all kidding aside, there was a listener question, and correct me if I'm wrong, it was verbatim. How much Masterone should Scott use to grow a stash, right? Is that?
Yeah, to grow a Mike Mentzer mustache, because I've been into Mentzer lately.
I know, I've seen that. Mike Mentzer, by the way, does have a porn stash.
No, totally, he did. Yeah.
Yeah, he did. Yeah. I would say 100 milligrams every other day. And then if you want the handlebar one, 150 every other day.
150? All right.
I'm going with that.
All right, cool. Fair enough.
Or you could take none and just tape one on.
Yeah.
You can just grow it.
Yeah.
Can you grow a mustache?
Yeah, I can grow some decent facial hair, but I'm not interested. I might not shave for a few days. That's just my quarantine look. And then I didn't shave today. And then I'll probably shave tomorrow though. That's just my jam.
I think you should forget Kerry King. I think you should grow the Tom Araya. The Santa Claus mustache.
Everybody has a beard nowadays. You know that? You notice that? Look at S2H has a beard, but you had one before. So.
I've always had this sexiness.
You're doing it to be cool, like all the kids. That's what it is.
Yeah, I look like a kid.
When you're strikingly handsome as I am, if I grow a gear or like a goat, it's just not going to be fair to the other gentlemen around me. So that's why I figure I want to keep it. I mean, look at this guy here. You know, I don't want to, you know. He's already ahead. Look at that profile. Look at Scott's profile. Damn, look at that.
Yeah, I'm not a big facial hair fan personally. But, yeah, it seems like everybody has a beard nowadays. That's the thing to do. You grow a beard and you compete in classic physique. That's the combo.
Yeah.
That's where I'm heading.
Yeah.
I thought you were doing board shorts.
I'll do anything. It doesn't matter. Yeah.
So this.
No, I don't do board shorts. I don't really have a good ass for board shorts. They don't really, you know, they kind of get that flat look, you know.
This next weekend, we are going to have a historical event happening in the state of Michigan. Michigan State Championships is being held. and it will be in a tent.
What? A tent?
Yeah.
It's a big tent, probably.
Like a circus tent. Like a circus.
Wow.
This whole thing's a circus.
Man, it better not be humid or the freaking...
Yeah, no kidding.
Tanning, oh man. God. How are they going to tan anybody outside?
Okay, so here's what I've heard. Actually, I can probably look up on... let's see. I'll go to the weather report here. Let's see here. So next weekend is supposed to be... Well, right now we're predicted for about 90 and thunderstorms.
That'll work out well.
Tons of humidity.
Yeah, a lot of humidity going on.
In a tent.
Yeah, so
good luck with that.
Yeah, that doesn't make any sense to me.
Well, the other option is they just don't do it, is what it comes down to.
When everybody's up there all streaked and, you know, it's going
to
look like...
It was going to be streaking like and dripping yeah. Protan. Scott, are you going to go to said venue?
Actually, yes. I have two clients that are competing there, so I shall be there.
So you will film inside of said venue and show us the tent, right?
Oh, absolutely. There's no question. I'm going to do a video... For Think Big, it's going to be.
You'll show the outside of the tent as well as the interior, right?
I will. Now that you mentioned it, I'll make sure I do. Yeah.
You might not want to spray them.
Well, they got it. What are you going to do? Not tan?
Fuck.
Melanotan.
It's a little late now.
They can walk. They can have boners on stage.
I mean, you could. I could legitimately see in that being just a nightmare.
Yeah. They're going to stage him in air conditioning, and then he's going to have cooling fans in the tent.
Okay.
So.
That's the only way.
I mean, I feel like you could probably, now think about this. If you had cooling fans blowing on you, usually when you're on stage, it's hot and those lights are hot and you're just sitting there in stagnant air. But if you had like a fan blowing on you the whole time you're posing, I don't know.
I'd get a
maybe
boner.
It'll be good. Maybe it'll turn out to be good.
Yeah, it might be all right. The lighting, I'm assuming the lighting is not going to be the best, or it's going to be quite different than an indoor venue.
I mean, they could rig up scaffolding, you know, in a big enough tent.
If the tent's white, it's going to be an odd lighting situation.
Maybe they'll paint the tent black.
Maybe it'll rain.
Yeah, it probably will.
I'm going to watch that video.
Yeah, I'm going to watch it too.
Yeah, I'm excited though. Because here's the thing. I asked somebody the other day. I was like, hey, are you coming out to the Michigan guy that I know in the area that competes? And he was like, no. I was like, really? And he sounded like he was disappointed. And he's like, I just don't think. He was like, I don't know. Maybe he just didn't want to go. But his answer was that he was like, I don't think, you know, like I'd want to, I don't think it's going to be like, I want to see guys at their best. He's like, I don't want to see guys that like the quarantine. Some guys might not have been able to compete, and so that there isn't going to be as many of them. And he was like, and I want to see them under the best lights. Like, I don't want to see them in a tent.
No offense, but like, when are there? How often is there really, really good lights at these shows?
That's a good point. Yeah, it's a once in a lifetime event, really. You know.
Yeah.
Do you remember the beginning of Pumping Iron? They had right after the ballerina part, then they went to like some amateur contests.
Yeah.
And the guys on stage were in a tent, and there was like a calliope playing, like an organ.
Was it inside a tent?
Yeah. It was like, yeah. Mm-hmm. It was like a big tent, and it looked hot.
So it'll be
as
like
fuck.
Pumping Iron.
Yeah. That's what I'm thinking.
So does that mean you might as well just adjust and you have like a big. Posing trunks, you know, and grow sideburns out real quick.
Get your diaper on.
Everybody will be under the same conditions.
Diaper-sized posing trunks.
Everybody will be under the same conditions. So there is that. You know what I mean? So, you know, it's not like you have a disadvantage, but somebody else won't, you know.
That's a good point. That's true. Everyone's in the same venue.
Right. Exactly.
Same ring.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So
we'll see how your video comes out.
I'm hopeful. I'm hopeful for this.
I'm curious.
Yeah. Well, that's all we got, guys. This is the.
I gotta pee.
All right. So, anyways, guys, I probably should have mentioned this at the beginning, but if you enjoy our content, do me a favor, hit the subscribe button. This is for everybody on YouTube, not you live listeners. Although you should head over there and do that too. And, you know, of course, check out our sponsors, TrueNutrition.com. You can use our code ADVICES and go to GetAzoth.com. You can use our code ADVICES10. Dave Kalick, thank you for joining us, guys.
Thanks, Dave.
Yeah, it was fun, guys. We'll do it again.
It's been fun. S2H, it's a pleasure as always.
I'm still waiting for my Azoff.
Oh, yeah. We'll work on
Scott
that.
Scott McNally.
See you guys.